I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, how Governor Bob Ferguson is twisting data about the state's economy to suit his political needs. Plus, we've now learned what the charges will be against a man caught on camera stealing voter signatures and corruption as Democrats try to remove a duly elected sheriff from office early. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our independent show for just $5 a month. That's how this show is possible. Go to UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. We missed you on the live show yesterday, but we had a fantastic time supporting the Snohomish County Canine Foundation. They do an annual golf meet for their charity. And we're going to be releasing a video that shows me. We were at Hole 4. We sponsored Hole 4 at the golf meet. And Nicole and I quizzed golfers on American history. And I will say, I'm worried about society, frankly. No, a lot of it, they all had a good time with it. But I think you know the answers to some of these things taken from the citizenship exam. But then a lady puts you on camera when you're not expecting it and asks you questions about how America works and you just freeze up. But we'll have a video. Maybe we'll play a clip of it on the show tomorrow. But I appreciate you understanding because we really care about that charity quite a bit and wanted to participate in the golf event this year. One of my big frustrations with politics and why, you know, although it's my job, me and politicians, we just don't get along great. One, it's not my job to get along with them. But two, politics is the enemy of nuance. And I really like nuance. I think nuance is important. I think nuance is what separates a show like this from, you know, maybe my old job in TV news, really understanding that things aren't always black and white and that there's a lot of different ways that one person can interpret the same information or the same data. And unless you dive deep into it to truly understand what it means, then people can use and abuse data to suit any sort of political need. And that's certainly what Governor Bob Ferguson is doing in the state of Washington. God, he's insufferable. He's absolutely insufferable. And I don't know who's telling him to post these things. And to me, when I read these things, I say to myself, he thinks people are stupid. He thinks people are stupid and they will blindly read that and they will not dig any deeper into it. And, you know, in some instances, maybe it's not stupidity, but it's political loyalty where people are like, oh, he bats for my team. And so I'm not going to, you know, question anything he says. Governor Ferguson posted this on X yesterday. Last year, my first year as governor, Washington ranked number 14 in CNBC's Best States for Business. This year, we moved up three spots to number 11. Next year, we're going to crack the top 10. We won't stop until we're number one. And he posted this video alongside it.
Hey everybody, Bob Ferguson, Governor of Washington State here with some good news. CNBC does an annual ranking of the best or worst states to do business in the United States. Last year, my first year as governor, we ranked 14th. The rankings just came out. We moved up three spots to number 11. So we're making progress in our path to make Washington the absolute best state to do business. Next year, we're going to crack that top 10. We're on our way to number one. Appreciate all the partnership we have to make Washington literally the best place to do business anywhere in the United States.
Wow. It's stunning to me. It is so stunning, surrounded by headlines about what's happening to his state's economy, businesses, wealth, investors, that he can stand there with his stupid little sparkling drink in his hand, which I think somebody's paying him to hold because he's holding one of those damn things all the time. I'm going to dig into the ownership of that company to see if he has any friends or family. But it's amazing that he can stand there and suggest that we're on our way to number one. We're on our way to be the best state in the nation for business, given everything that's going on. But he didn't make up the fact that CNBC has Washington State ranked at number 11 for the best states to do business. However, when you dig into this data, as we are going to do right now, you realize that the very reasons why Washington State is at number 11 are the very reasons why we're concerned about the direction that the state is heading. And, you know, I want to make clear, I've never said that Washington State has always been a horrible place for business. No, my concern stems from the reality that this has been historically a good place for business. because of some of the very policies that people like Bob Ferguson are now trying to get rid of. So when you look at that ranking, 11 for Washington State, it has across the board on a variety of factors, infrastructure, economy, workforce, quality of life, cost of doing business, technology and innovation, business friendliness. So 11 sounds good, but let's dig a little deeper into the data right now, because I think anybody who looks at it can understand why we can be number 11, but you can see what's coming on the horizon. Because the areas we're doing well versus the areas we're not doing well that have contributed to that ranking are just as plain as day. So let's take a look at the breakdown here. Washington's score and ranking. And I want to look at the areas where we're not doing well specifically. In the cost of doing business, we're a D minus. So even though overall they're saying we're number 11, in the cost of doing business, we're 47th in the nation. 47th of 50 states for the cost of doing business, D minus grade. That perfectly reflects a lot of what we've been ranting and raving about on this show. Largest package of tax increases in state history, capital gains, now the income tax on millionaires that hasn't technically taken effect yet, but it's there in the background. Business friendliness, D, 40th in the nation, 40 out of 50. For business friendliness, you can't be the number one state in the country for business and have one of the highest rates costs of doing business and have one of the lowest ratings for business friendliness. Those are two barometers that can change dramatically as policies change and based on the decisions of the people in power, right? Now let's take a look at the indicators that helped Washington State get to number 11, okay? Because these are things that right now have been baked into our state and our state's economy, but they're the exact things that we're at risk of losing. Workforce, for instance. We are sixth in the nation for the best workforce, B+. Why is that, you guys? Why do we have such a great statistic there? Well, it's because we created an environment where tech companies and entrepreneurs could come here and build businesses and grow and bring massive workforces in. So we have a highly skilled workforce in the state of Washington. But right now, everything that Bob Ferguson is doing, capital gains taxes, punishing big businesses, punishing the wealthy, those are the things that are going to change that for us. Quality of life. I would argue this has nothing to do with Bob Ferguson. It's a beautiful freaking place to live. It's a beautiful place to live. If you can look past the homeless drug addicts and look up at Mount Rainier, that's baked into the state. You know, quality of life, like, I'm sorry, you go to like Oklahoma or Nebraska, no offense to my alma mater. You know, not the most exciting. There's nothing to be found there. So quality of life, he can't take responsibility for that. Technology and innovation, A-. Yeah. Because our pro-business policies of the past led to Seattle becoming a hub for technology and innovation. But that is being decimated as we speak. And access to capital. Yeah, because of the good decisions the state made in the past, we have a lot of wealth here. We have a lot of startups here, a lot of entrepreneurs here, a lot of tech. So we have a lot of access to capital. B+. But I just talked on the show yesterday about how Seattle area VC deals are slowing amid top-heavy market. It was from the Puget Sound Business Journal. Seattle is like dead last among VC-backed startups in the first quarter of 2026. What is VC? Capital. Venture capital-backed startups. So although in, you know, 2026, when this rating came out and they did all the information on it, they gave us a B+ for access to capital, an A- for technology and innovation, that's not happening anymore already. As far as VC-backed startups, the Bay Area had 669, New York City had 490. Seattle's all the way down the list, below Boston, below Austin, below Miami, below Denver, below Washington, D.C., with just 69. So we're already heading in the wrong direction very quickly. And the things that have lifted our score up are the things that are now in most peril. And the things that we're warning about that will stop businesses from coming here are the two areas where we're already lowest: business friendliness and cost of doing business. If you're looking to start a business today, what matters to you? The cost of doing business and whether the state's policies are friendly to business. And ours are not even according to CNBC. And then, of course, you have some things that will be changing in the future that are going to lower our ranking. What's one of those things? On our economic profile, one of the things they point out is that our top individual income tax rate is what? It's nothing. Yeah, right now, it's nothing. But they've passed an income tax on quote-unquote millionaires that will make sure we have a 9.9% tax on the income of the wealthy. And then what happens from there? Well, then they're going to reduce it because we're heading towards an economic cliff. So Bob Ferguson can brag about this ranking, but when you actually dig into the numbers, our individual rankings that contributed to that score show exactly why we should be terrified, show exactly why he should be very concerned. Because we can't count on just that one metric that no governor can change, you know, the quality of life, why people want to live in a state like Washington. We can't count on that. Because at some point, that doesn't make up for all the bad stuff. And so you see, he is depending on people who don't want to hear nuance. It's like, oh, well, Brandy says the state's economy is horrible, but CNBC ranked us at 11, so it can't be that bad. I mean, that's like, that's lazy, stupid, political allegiances. That's the group of people that reads into that, and that's who he's counting on. And it's much more difficult to win with a nuanced argument. If he goes out there and says, we're number 11, according to CNBC, and then I have to spend 10 minutes explaining, well, yeah, you're number 11. However, there's some really troubling indicators, and there's some things that aren't going very well. And so, you know, Washington State should actually be very concerned. My version is a much difficult version to explain and to sell. And that's why, you know, politics is the enemy of nuance. But of course, people who know and who have succeeded in business know what's going on. And that's whose opinion I care about. Is that not whose opinion everyone should care about? If we're talking about, is Washington State a good place for business? Who should we ask that of? The people who have succeeded in business, right? The people who have built businesses, right? And those people say Washington State is not a good place for business anymore. Howard Schultz is one of them. This is the second time he's now speaking out about what's happening in Washington State. He posted this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Will Washington State choose stagnation over growth? It says, as the Evergreen State throws money at AI data centers, it ignores the builders of tomorrow. He says in here, Washington used to be a favored destination for entrepreneurs because state leaders understood the vital role businesses play in creating jobs and sustaining a tax base that enables government to operate. Yeah, whose opinion am I going to believe about what it takes to build a successful business? Howard freaking Schultz or Bob Ferguson, who has only worked in his entire life in the private sector for like 4 months or something. And it was like for a private law firm. Howard Schultz. You'd have to be an idiot to say Bob Ferguson. So Howard Schultz continues, even though he already moved to Florida, he continues to try to save, you know, a state and a city that has meant so much to him. And then on the show yesterday, and again with Bob Ferguson, he's not blind to this. He knows, he just prefers to lie. That's the worst part. He knows, but he prefers to lie. He prefers to gaslight and rely on people just not caring much about nuance to be able to save his political skin. Because we had this on the show yesterday from our friend Ari Hoffman, Starbucks sent a letter May 16th, 2025 to Bob Ferguson, just a couple months after he took office. And they said, hey, man, some of the decisions you're making are pretty concerning. And, you know, this new largest tax increase in state history, much of it on the backs of businesses, this is going to be problematic for us, right? So he said, Starbucks sends him this letter, 2025, May. What does he do? He passes the largest package of taxes in state history into law anyway. And then he turns around and passes an income tax into law as well. So Starbucks, what does Starbucks do? Well, Starbucks goes out and it looks for a different place to go. because they're like, okay, well, we have a governor and a political party that we keep warning them and warning them. They don't listen. And so we're just going to look for another place to go. And what did Starbucks do? They went to Tennessee. And Tennessee gave them a bunch of money to build their HQ there, tax breaks galore. And they even gave them tax breaks for all the high-paying jobs that they're going to bring there. So about a month after Starbucks made the announcement and made public that they were opening an HQ in Tennessee, Governor Bob Ferguson went to meet with Starbucks at HQ in Seattle. The goal of that meeting? To try to convince them that Washington is a good place to do business. He obviously wasn't very successful in doing so because they're not changing their plans. And maybe he should have heeded their warning the first time they sent him a letter. Our friend Ari Hoffman, this is all part of a public records request Ari got back. There's a couple things about this I want to point out, but Ari Hoffman got the governor's meeting briefing on this meeting with Brian Nickel, the chairman and chief executive of Starbucks. Just a few things I have to point out about this. So it has all the background for him, talking points, like a picture of Brian Nickel, so he knows what he looks like if he runs into him, which, you know, that's fine. I have to laugh, though, at the meeting summary. The visit duration is 45 minutes, blah, 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 blah. Here's the meeting flow. 9:55 to 10 a.m., you arrive. A three-minute walk to a coffee tasting room. Like, why does he need to know it's a three-minute walk to the coffee tasting room? It's almost like Joe Biden. It's like, say thank you, stand up, leave the room, right? But in this talking points so his staff obviously talked to Starbucks before the meeting to sort of brief them on what was going on. And it says, Mr. Nickel may raise concerns about the overall business environment in Washington, including the impacts of the 2025 revenue package and the millionaires tax. In particular, he may raise concerns about sales tax on additional services like advertising and the 0.5% B&O tax surcharge on income over $250 million impacting the company. For the millionaire's tax, his concerns are more likely to be directed at retaining executive talent in the state. So they warned him a year ago. He didn't listen. Passed a massive tax increase. They moved to Tennessee. And then he goes a month later, crawling down to Starbucks HQ. To try to what? Convince them not to leave? Well, it obviously didn't work. No briefing in the world given to Governor Bob Ferguson could have given him what he needed, the talking points he needed, to convince Starbucks that Washington State is a good place for business. Kind of goes back to our theme of our show yesterday. Heed the warnings. They're not warning you like to test you. They're telling you exactly what's going to happen in detail. And then when you don't listen, they're executing on their plans. Because business is business. You can have strong ties to a city, strong ties to a state. But at the end of the day, if you're not making money, you're a charity. And they're not doing this for charity. It's a business. They're in business to make money, to employ people, and to contribute to the state's economy when it's done fairly. So it's just outrageous that this continues to be sort of something that Bob Ferguson could come out and say, we're heading towards number one, the number one state in the nation to do business. What a moron. At this point, frankly, I would support a socialist running against Bob Ferguson. Because what he's doing is essentially socialism, is the playbook of socialism. I would like Bob Ferguson to get a challenge from the left. And it's almost like put a real socialist in there who's not going to, at least they're going to say what they're trying to do as they do it. At least they're going to be honest about it. At least we don't have to have someone who campaigns on being a fiscal hawk and then passes the largest tax increase in state history. At least we don't have to have someone say, I'm not going to balance the budget on new taxes and then passes an unconstitutional income tax. I'd rather a socialist will get in there and say, I hate big businesses, they're evil. And they'll just like, oh, bye, you know, like Katie Wilson. I'd almost rather have that. And then we can absolutely hasten the state's ultimate demise. And maybe there's a point where it gets so bad that we start to rebuild. And it's not just Washington State, of course. And there's redundancy here, right? We're doing what other deep blue areas are doing. And what's happening is the same, whether it's in California scaring out the tech sector and wealth, you know, even with the proposal of a billionaire's tax. Same thing is going to happen. People are mobile. They will leave. Same thing's happening right now in New York City. From the New York Post, New York sees dramatic exodus of millionaires causing nearly $11 billion in losses in tax revenue. It says New York's share of U.S. millionaires dramatically declined in recent years, causing nearly $11 billion loss in much needed tax revenue in just 1 year. Can you imagine losing $11 billion as a state in 1 year? I mean, I think our budget is $80 billion. theirs is obviously much more, but still, that's just, it's unreal. Even before Mamdani took office, the Empire State's share of the nation's millionaires dipped from 12.7% to 8.7% over a period of 12 years, the largest decline of any state, according to CBC's competitive NYS value proposition tracker dashboard. So yeah, I mean, this is happening. We know what's going to happen. I mean, it's so hard for me to try to articulate it to people who either don't see it or choose not to see it. And those are kind of different, right? There's people who are checked out and they don't really know what's going on until it hits them. And they're like, wow, what happened? I wasn't paying attention. That's difficult. We've got to get them engaged somehow. We've got to, I mean, even at this golf thing Nicole and I were at yesterday, it is sort of surprising how many people say, oh, I don't watch the news or I don't know what's going on. And it's like, that's not the world we live in. But those are the people we have to engage. And then there's the people who choose not to see it. They pay attention. They look at everything. And then in their mind, they come to a completely different conclusion about what's going on. Those people are impossible because they don't want to know the truth. All right, coming up next, we have an update for you on that man who was arrested for robbery, for stealing voter signatures. He has now been charged with three different crimes. We'll detail what he is accused of doing. First, summer means a laundry list of things to do inside and outside your home. And you know what? This week's going to be really hot, actually. And so one of the things that I've been thinking about, and I learned it recently because I was chatting with Valentine about it, is a lot of, if you're like running your AC, right? And it's still not keeping up and your home still isn't cool, it might be because your attic isn't properly insulated. And that's one of the big things. You can lose 40% of your home's heat or cooling right outside the top of your house if your attic isn't properly insulated. So right now, our friends at Valentine are offering you guys a really cool deal. 10% off when you bundle a new roof with energy-saving attic insulation. 10% off with the bundle. So I think that's pretty cool because if you need a new roof anyway, and look, if you are lucky enough to have central air, which I don't, Mike and I just cart around a couple of those mobile AC units from Costco, and they do the job because our attic is properly insulated. So same thing in the winter. I mean, that's why, you know, heat just escapes. You need to make sure you have a properly insulated attic. And right now, 10% off if you bundle with our friends at Valentine a new roof with that energy-saving attic insulation. Call 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING for your free estimate today. Tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right, so you will remember this guy.
So do you want these or do you want me to take them?
You cannot take those. What are you doing? Call the police!
How about not petitioning?
Call the police! You are taking a legal document that is illegal. You need to give it back to me.
Yeah, that's right.
Give it back to me. It's not too late.
Have a great day.
Give me back those papers. You're gonna be prosecuted. Don't do anything stupid. Don't be doing anything stupid.
Have a great day.
So that is Benjamin Brown of Puyallup. There was a woman who was collecting signatures to repeal the unconstitutional income tax outside a Safeway. He took it upon himself. It sounds like he witnessed the store manager tell her, hey, we don't want you here, but it's kind of not up to them. And so she continued to collect signatures. He asked to see the signature form. You know, it's got basically like a, what do you call it? Clipboard with all the things in it. And then he stole it. And they've never recovered it. And at the time, Pierce County Sheriff's Office, they were right on it because he got into his truck. She recorded his license plate. They knew who it was immediately. And so there's all this background about, you know, trying to track him down. You know, they never recovered the signatures or whatever it is. But Pierce County had arrested him for robbery in the second degree, which I said at the time, I doubt he gets charged with robbery. But technically, I mean, he assaulted her and he stole something. So by the letter of the law, that is robbery, but we now know what the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office has charged Benjamin Brown with. So he faces three counts. Count one, corrupt practices, initiative, or referendum petitions. I'll get to more on that in a second. Count two, assault in the fourth degree. And count three, theft in the third degree. Really quick on the theft in the third degree. That one's tricky because theft based on degree is based on the value of what you stole. And I you can't really assign a value per se to signatures, I guess, for that signature gatherer. I think they get paid like $5 a signature. There was like maybe a couple dozen signatures. I would argue that, you know, that the value of those signatures is priceless, but it's hard because you can't assign a technical value to it. So that corrupt practices is the thing when he did this that I thought that he would probably ultimately be charged with. So in the charging documents, they outline essentially what it means. It says, we contend that Benjamin Lee Brown in Pierce County, Washington, on or about the 9th day of June, 2026, did interfere with or attempt to interfere with the right of any voter to sign or not to sign an initiative or referendum petition, or with the right to vote for or against an initiative or referendum measure by threats, intimidation, or any other corrupt means or practice contrary to state law and against the peace and dignity of the state of Washington. So that definitely fits the crime. And again, like, do I want some guy who... I'm going to get crap for saying this because I obviously think what's been happening with the signature gatherers is horrible. I mean, it's an attack on our democratic process, and Democrats say they care about that, but apparently not when it's happening against people collecting signatures for an initiative they disagree with. Like, you know, I don't know his criminal history. Do I think he should go to prison for robbery in the second degree? No. But do I think that these three charges fit the bill and will dissuade, hopefully, people from doing something like this down the road? Yeah, I do. I mean, I the theft in the third degree thing is tough, but I understand it by the letter of the law. But the corrupt practices is really what he's engaged in here. He stole voter signatures. He used force to do it. He assaulted a woman. And those signatures never recovered. So those are people who didn't get to, who tried to use their voice. It's basically your signature is a vote. It's just like stealing ballots, which is a felony, by the way. So maybe I'm rethinking it. You know, I really think maybe the law needs to change on that, to treat a signature like stealing a ballot and like destroying a ballot. Because if it's a felony to do that, shouldn't it be a felony to steal someone's or destroy someone's signature that is in essence a vote? So maybe something for the legislature to look at, although Democrats in the control of the legislature will never do that because they like this sort of stuff. So Benjamin Brown, not great. Three charges against you. I'm glad the Pierce County Prosecuting Attorney's Office is proceeding to trial with this. He waived his first appearance in court. And in fact, I was reading the probable cause affidavit and police weren't even able to interview him. Like, they went to his house, which was really close to the Safeway where all of this happened. They knocked on the door. His daughter was there. She's like, what's this all about? They, you know, the police told her. And then she's like, well, what was the initiative about? Like, that's the weirdest reaction. And they said it doesn't matter. And then they got a neighbor comes out and is like, hey, what's going on? And they got Benjamin Brown's phone number from the neighbor. And they call this phone number and a guy answers and he says, no, that's not me. Click. So they never got to talk to him. But so there is no, he hasn't given an excuse for this. There is no sort of explanation from him because we were contacted by multiple people after this happened saying, oh, you know, he actually agrees with the initiative. This woman was harassing him. There's nothing in the report to suggest she was harassing him. It sounds like he just really didn't like that she was at Safeway when Safeway didn't want her to be there. So that's an update on that. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, we have not talked about this yet. Shame on us, but it's never too late. So, of course, we've covered, I mean, the issue of what's happening with Pierce County Sheriff Keith Swank and the fact that Democrats don't like him. They don't like what he says. They don't like what he posts on X. So they want him gone. And they've been trying to do everything they can do to remove him from office. And so now the Pierce County Charter Review Commission has been meeting over the last, gosh, month or 2 months. And they are going to do, and voters are going to have a say on it, they're going to do what King County did. In King County, you can no longer elect your sheriff. The sheriff is appointed by a politician. So now the sheriff is political pawn, serves at the will of a politician. And Pierce County is moving towards the same thing. So this is from the News Tribune. Vote to appoint Pierce County Sheriff. End Swank's term early goes to the ballot. Yes, you heard that correctly. So not only did the Charter Review Commission decide that it was going to, because they can't do it unilaterally. This is something they have to send to voters. Voters in Pierce County are going to have to be the ones to decide, do we want to give away, vote away our right to vote for sheriff, right? So that's one thing, to send that decision to voters. But what they're doing in Pierce County is an entirely different thing, and they're being very honest about the motivation. So it says, Pierce County Sheriff Keith Swank's continued employment as the county's top law enforcement officer is headed to the November ballot. The Pierce County Charter Review Commission voted Monday to send a proposal to the general election that would revert the county government to a system where the sheriff is appointed and terminate Swank's four-year term early on January 1st, 2027. These corrupt sons of bitches. That's as corrupt as it gets. You want to say and give voters a say? Look, if voters want to vote away their right to vote, that's stupid, but by all means, at least you've done it democratically. But to add in there an amendment that says, oh, and also, the term he was elected to. He was elected to 4 years. And they want to cut it short. And these are the people who think that Trump is a threat to democracy. In the middle of the man's term, they didn't elect him for all 3 years or until, you know, 4 years or until bureaucrats decide otherwise. No, they elected him to 4 years. So again, you want to do this process and leave it up to voters and say, at the end of this guy's term, we're moving on to an appointed sheriff. And the voters decide to do that? Who am I to say that's the wrong thing to do? But you want to end his term early. Listen to what one of these guys on the Charter Review Commission said about it. It says, commissioners have described the proposal, and of course they're there with their pride flag and their trans pride flag. It's like, oh my God, you already know what you're getting out of these people. Commissioners have described the proposal to appoint the sheriff as their most hotly contested charter amendment. When it was originally proposed by Commissioner Jake Hunter, it did not contain language that would end Swank's time in office early. As an amendment to the proposal emerged Monday, and this happened several weeks ago, we're just getting around to talking about it. As an amendment to the proposal emerged, commissioners who have opposed having an appointed sheriff described it as a slap in the face to voters. That I agree with. Hunter, so just one of the people that was appointed to this commission, he's a licensed tax practitioner, he sponsored the appointed sheriff proposal. He previously told the News Tribune that he disagrees with the way Swank has operated since he took office in 2025. He has said amending the charter to appoint the sheriff was the only way he could find to address the problem of a sheriff he describes as a potential existential threat to the county. He just said it out loud. This isn't about like, oh, an appointed sheriff is a better way to go. King County did it, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't like Keith Swank. And he sees Keith Swank, despite the fact that Keith Swank was duly elected to office, he describes him as an existential threat to the county by what? Enforcing the law? Genuinely, okay? I've said I'm not a big Keith Swank fan, just because he's a little out there, right? But what makes him an existential threat to the county? Because he goes on X and he says that boys aren't girls. Is that causing some sort? It might cause an existential threat to your ideology as you're sitting there flanked by your pride flags. But that's not an existential threat to the county. What? Because he actually enforces the law? And when we find out that there's a school that has a pride display with vials of testosterone, he sends one of his deputies there to seize them into evidence? That's an existential threat, again, to your LGBTQ plus alphabet mafia. But it's not an existential threat to the county. So existential that you have to override the will of voters who elected him. And yes, his term would be cut short by voters, but it's not going to be the exact same set of voters who elected him in 2025. I mean, if you want to get him out of office, the only appropriate way to do it would be a recall. This is a recall done like in a roundabout way without having to go through the steps of prove he did something worthy of a recall. And you already know how much money they're going to spend on the airwaves and how the media is going to paint this as the best thing ever. The media already does hit piece after hit piece after hit piece after hit piece on Keith Swank. And there's so many of those that they're going to convince voters that Keith Swank is on the ballot in November. That, oh, you're voting basically to get rid of this horrible guy. When in reality, you're voting to totally upend and give away your right to vote for the top law enforcement officer in your county. These people are corrupt to the core. Can you imagine the holy hell they'd been raising if the roles were reversed? If a Democrat unexpectedly in a red county won a sheriff's position and he wasn't enforcing the law and Republicans went around and tried to do something like this and cut their term short, oh my gosh, they'd be like, threat to democracy, attacks on democracy. But now it's just the only way that he could find to address the problem of a sheriff he describes as potentially an existential threat to the county. Absolutely insane. Here's what Keith Swank has to say about it. I was elected to enforce the laws and protect the people of this county. I don't answer to a small group of commissioners or political insiders like Ryan Mello, who's the Pierce County executive, uber far lefty, and he gets to be the one to appoint a sheriff if they do this. I answer to the voters who put me here. That's the system that has worked since this county was founded, and it's the system that delivers accountability. The numbers don't lie. Haters say crime is up because of me, but that's not true. Thanks to the men and women of the Pierce County Sheriff's Office, burglary is down 43% and violent crime is down 35%. These results come from focusing on real law enforcement, not political correctness. I've also refused to stay silent on issues that matter, including the reality that biological men are not women, and that putting men in women's sports or prisons creates real safety problems for females. The backlash I've faced proves how badly some people want to silence anyone who won't play along. Turns out that truth is the new hate speech. The real problem is that an appointed sheriff would answer to whoever controls the appointment process, whether that's Governor Ferguson or someone else from the far left. An appointed sheriff means more politics and less independence. Pierce County doesn't need that. We need a sheriff who puts results and truth above everything else. The people of this county already made their choice in 2006. They elected me to do this job in 2004. Changing the rules now to undo that choice is nothing more than a backdoor way to override the voters. It's the opposite of democracy. Courage is contagious, and it's time for all of us to step up. And he's right on the courage is contagious. And frankly, shame on me. Shame on me for continuing to couch all of my segments on Keith Swank with, I don't really like the guy. Because at this point, that doesn't even matter. And I don't know why I feel the need to do that. Like, that's already on the record of that. But I think the point I'm trying to make is I don't have to support an individual sheriff or candidate to know that what's happening here is deeply wrong. What's happening here is an attack on our democracy. And for anyone screeching about democracy, if you don't feel the same way about this, you're a hypocrite. You're what's wrong with America. You're what's wrong with our state. So this is going to be one hell of a fight. One more thing in November. We have a ton on the ballot in November. And they're going to paint this about Keith Swank. He hates trans people, whatever it is, blah, 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 blah. And then those voters down there, especially the ones who are low, you know, low information voters, they're going to just be like, okay, well, the News Tribune told me this is a bad guy, so I should probably vote for it. Absolutely unbelievable what's happening down there. Corrupt to the core. All right. Coming up next, Washington cities continue to push forward policies that would punish landlords and continue to reduce available rental housing. We'll discuss first. If you are thinking about leaving the state, maybe looking for a place to live elsewhere, or you're just downsizing or upsizing or whatever it is, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. I would recommend going to his website, perusing some of the listings that he's been able to sell for clients. Gives you a good idea of the way that his marketing team works and the listings work, because I think that's really important right now, given a lot that there's so many listings on the market. Yours has to stand out. And it's important to Wes and his team not only to make your listing stand out, but to make your home stand out when people actually come there and they walk in the door. And so that is a combination of staging, cosmetic upgrades, if your home needs it, and of course, balancing all of that with what is it going to get you on the back end. So you can get the same results that home sellers have had in the past in Washington State. You might just have to be a little more strategic, know your plan moving into it, and Wes Jones can do that with his free market analysis. So even if you're just at the early stages of noodling, selling your home, reach out to Wes, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, so we've talked briefly on the show last week about a couple things, policies that are being debated. Can we start in Seattle? Because we discussed this in Seattle last week. Seattle mayor considering crackdown on rental hidden junk fees. So this is the press conference that Mayor Katie Wilson held and then snuck away before she could answer any questions on it. But basically, they want to limit the types of fees that landlords can charge tenants. And it's for a whole variety of things. And then in Spokane, this is an interesting one because I've never really heard about a policy like this. Spokane's proposed renter's right to cooling ordinance gets an amendment. And so this has been something that's in the process in Spokane. The ins and outs of it are interesting, but basically they're saying that a renter has a right to have air conditioning. And so landlords have to provide them with air conditioning. And I think we can have sort of a conversation about that and what does that look like in the timeline. But of course, we have, in full disclosure, the Rental Housing Association, they're sponsors of the show. But a familiar face has now joined the RHA, who you'll meet in a moment, and he agreed to join us today to discuss. Kevin Schilling, welcome back to Undivided.
So happy to be back here.
Well, now you're with the RHA, so what's your new gig?
New gig is being the Government Affairs and Advocacy Director for the Rental Housing Association of Washington, so over 6,000 local housing providers here in the state.
Love it. Well, as you know, RHA has been wonderful advertisers on our show for a few years, and sometimes we have you guys pop on and talk about housing policy stories that are in the news, and you get to say why you like or don't like them, and I'll play devil's advocate, okay?
Okay.
How does that sound? Great.
Of course.
You might be advertisers on the show, but it doesn't mean I won't tell you if I disagree with you. So those are the rules. Let's go to Spokane first. So the Spokane City Council is debating a right to cooling piece of legislation and ordinance. So essentially, my understanding of it is that landlords have to provide some sort of cooling unit to tenants if they want it?
So this last year, this last legislative session, the legislature passed a law that said you as a tenant can put an AC unit or a fan or something if you want to in your unit and your housing provider can't say no.
Yeah.
So that already passed. That's in force as of June this year. What Spokane is doing, Spokane is interested in kind of taking it a little bit of a step further and saying every bedroom, every rental unit's bedroom must have an AC unit or some form of cooling that does not allow the unit to get above 80 degrees.
Okay.
So they're doing this in response to a couple of years ago, the heat dome situation where 20 people passed away from extreme heat. Now, of course, that's terrible. And nobody wants people to die from extreme heat. But what the Spokane City Council is proposing right now is a mandate, a requirement, that almost immediately every rental unit's bedroom has to not be able to get to above 80 degrees.
And that would be at the cost to the landlord, right? The 100%. Landlord would have to pay to install something on a pretty short time frame.
Not even a short time frame, immediately.
Immediately. So, and what if they don't?
What if they don't? A tenant can file a complaint with the city against the landlord, can take them to court, can say that they are not living up to the law. And that puts housing providers in a difficult situation where they don't know what they need to be complying with or not complying with.
I'm sorry. It's the Pacific Northwest. Very few people have AC, right? Is that still a... Nicole, do you have AC?
Window unit.
Yeah, we don't have it in our house. Who's going to pay for my AC, Kevin? That's what I want to know. Who's going to pay for my AC?
My personal apartment doesn't have an AC unit. I have one of those big box ones that I get from Costco and wheel it around.
Yeah.
Who's going to pay for Brandy Cruz's AC?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, again, Brandy, it gets to that conversation of the property rights and the individual rights and the landlord-tenant relationship. Maybe that should be a conversation you have with whoever you're...
My landlord, like, would that be my husband? It is his house. I will demand that my husband install air conditioning. But
there
I just feel like we're getting into this micro-regulation that's really gotten out of control. Another one I want to talk to you about, the city of Seattle. So they're debating these bans on what they're calling junk fees. So I was reading into what counts as a junk fee and what doesn't count. So they say that under this ordinance, if it becomes law, landlords could not tack on additional fees for things like pet rent, mail service, use of in-unit appliances, access to common areas. So I guess I didn't even know that some of these things were fees, in all fairness. Pet fee, I've always had to pay a pet. There's always been a pet fee is not new to anyone. But like, are there landlords charging fees like for access to common areas or using in-unit appliances?
You know, if they are, it's probably the really big guys. It's probably not the mom pas that have a duplex or a triplex. It's probably the folks that are in multi-hundred unit complexes or something like that. But certainly this is another continuation of the theme of sort of micro regulation where we say, if you, government, are saying housing providers are banned from collecting fees for services, well, how many housing providers are going to use those services anymore?
Yeah.
How many services are going to be provided? And at the cost to whom? And one of the things we've been saying around this issue in the city of Seattle is if you are going to ban the collection of fees for any kind of service, not only are housing providers maybe not going to charge for the services anymore, provide those services anymore, but it's just going to become a rent increase. You're just going to increase the baseline rent cost because no one wants to pay for anything anymore. And the sort of the theory around the Mayor Katie Wilson idea of prohibiting fees is it's not just going to prohibit the service. It's going to be a baseline rent increase because local housing providers need a way to pay for the services that they're providing, mm-hmm. plain and simple. This goes beyond a transparency requirement. This goes towards the government saying to private housing owners and housing providers, you cannot charge for a fee for a service. And that just goes beyond a private property rights discussion. That goes beyond a tenant-landlord relationship. That's the government determining what can and cannot be charged. But it's also a conversation about individual usage of property as well. Because, you know, Brandy, if you've got your dog and I don't have a dog and all of a sudden I've got to pay for your dog, you know, I'm fine with having, I like Brandy's dog. I see Brandy's dog. I pet Brandy's dog. We're friends. We're neighbors. But I don't want to pay for your dog.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay for everyone else's service usage in my building if I'm not using that service, right? And I think that's where we're going down.
Yeah, and it's just an issue in my mind of overregulation. We played on the show last week the arguments that the activists made against these so-called junk fees. But my thought is like, okay, as long as you know about the fee when you're signing up to rent an apartment, like that's all that matters, right? You're agreeing that you're going to pay this fee for whatever sort of service that they're giving you. So as long as it's transparent. Now, I would agree that if it's hidden, right, I don't think you should hide anything, but there's no indication that that's actually happening. And so instead of, and again, on the show last week, we discussed this from the perspective of the socialists, but it's like instead of punishing, you know, job creators, that's what they're doing. They're punishing people who are productive and landlords, people who are able to provide housing for people. And I don't understand what the result of that is. What they think the result of that is going to be. Like, we have rent control and all of these crazy things across the state. You really think that people are just going to sit down and take it and they're going to continue to have available housing for people? Like, no, they're just going to sell it and then it's going to be occupied by a family and it's going to be out of the rental market. And this inability to understand that, despite the fact it's proven time and time again, is pretty startling to me. But of course, I think that what the socialists really want is for the landlords to be caught not following something so they can seize their property for the public good, which we're probably not too far away from that moment. All right, trans extremists threatening elected leaders in San Francisco. We'll discuss, and yes, we are going to talk about the diarrhea virus. It's time, okay? I've been avoiding it for long enough. First, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is going to be having another one of his free live webinars. This one's coming up July 23rd. It's his Market Blind Spot webinar. And the point of it is basically to say, look, a lot of headlines out there, whether it's about AI, inflation, what's happening with tech in Seattle, tech jobs, or what's happening with energy, given what's going on in Iran. But what is actually having an impact on your retirement portfolio? And of course, is your retirement portfolio positioned to withstand what's ever happening? So Zach comes on the webinar. He talks about some of those things, takes questions from you if you have any. It's like a second opinion on your retirement portfolio. And just to get a little information to connect the dots of what's happening across the world and what's happening in your efforts to save for your own retirement. So join Bulwark Capital Zach Abraham for his free Market Blind Spot webinar, July 23rd, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can have your questions answered. Also, when you go to sign up, make sure you check out how to follow Zach across social media platforms. Again, that's knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Okay, so there was a trans rights march in San Francisco on June 26th. And as they usually do, they, you know, were chaotic and, you know, breaking things allegedly. There was some evidence that they vandalized property. And they assaulted people with spray paint who they disagreed with, typical left-wing stuff. But now they're mad that people got arrested. Oh my gosh, how dare you arrest members of the trans community for breaking the law? Because we've essentially trained them to think that they are special, special people and they are deserving of special, special treatment. So they should get away with anything they do. So they had a second march they were at City Hall. This is fascinating because the city agreed to meet with the leader of the trans march to talk about their concerns, which again is more special treatment. And you wonder why they have all these demands. So part of their demands are they want the city to drop charges against everyone arrested during the march. And then they want, of course, the city to invest in community safety, not police, because they don't think those two things go together. So they want to replace police with civilian traffic management. So like if there's a march and police are needed to basically like make sure nobody gets hit by a car or whatever it is, they don't want them to be police officers. They want them to be civilian traffic management, because the civilian traffic managers will be able to handle acts of violence and vandalism just fine, right? So they're outside City Hall making these demands, not release because they're not still in jail, but drop the charges against the trans marchers. And I would say that what they were saying outside City Hall was quite threatening.
So, if the mayor allows our deadline to pass, we escalate the political cost. Oh. Every single time city officials step out for a campaign rally, a press conference, or a photo op, our coalition will be there. We are ending the era of politicians waving the pride flag for public relations while staying silent when riot gear is deployed against us.
Well, don't riot.
And if the city refuses to order SFMTA to protect our streets from hostile drivers, well, then fine. We will manage the perimeter ourselves.
Great.
We will train our volunteers, map out our intersections, and run our own civilian traffic closures. A movement doesn't win on rhetoric. It wins on organization.
You know what's really interesting about that at the end? They're talking about, we will map out perimeters, and we will man those perimeters like a border? Like a checkpoint? Kind of icy, honestly. Little bit fascist-y by your standards. But yeah, so now they're going to harass politicians until they drop charges against these people who broke the law. And I will say, this particular sort of, there's trans people out there who don't do anything but mind their business. That's not this. These are far left-wing activists, agitators, and what they do is wreak havoc and violence and mayhem. And so when they say something like that, although they're not coming out and saying we're going to confront these politicians and hurt them, that's what they're going to do. That's what they're going to do. Honestly, it's terrifying because that's what they do all the time. It's happened in Seattle. It's happened in Portland. It's happening in San Francisco. So they, and look, I blame the politicians. Yeah, I know you shouldn't blame the victim, but I blame the politicians because, again, they have given them this sense of entitlement. That they get special treatment and they get handled with kids' gloves because they're transgender. And so, yes, you can break the law. Yes, you can do all of these things. And we'll have a meeting with you at City Hall. What kind of criminals do you invite to City Hall? You know, oh, you broke the law. It's okay. Come to City Hall. We'll talk about it. Only transgender people. Top, top, top of the woke pyramid right now. Transgender people above everyone else. All right, let's talk about the diarrhea thing, shall we? So you've probably seen the explosive headlines. See? Mm-hmm. Explosive headlines. And it's funny because all the news sites are like, we got to get a click out of this. And so they're using the explosive diarrhea headline. Explosive diarrhea virus reaches Tampa Bay. Latest updated map tracking explosive diarrhea cases. You know what they need for that map? Is like the map DeSantis used at the debate against Gavin Newsom, where it was a map of where there was
the
human
feces.
Yeah, so we just need that map. But like, and how is this being, like, does someone call and say, hey, I just had explosive diarrhea, count our, you know, put a pin on the map, right?
Well, I think they're going to the hospital.
Sure, Nicole.
Dehydrated.
I assumed it was hospital.
So I think that
they're calling from the bathroom.
And I guess if you get dehydrated enough, then you go to the hospital. But I'm not going to the hospital with my explosive diarrhea.
Oh, I think it's bad enough. You're going.
No.
So, and then
you just don't
the culprit is here. It's like, is it fruits and vegetables? A New York Post says lettuce may be to blame. Independent says Taco Bell now under investigation, which honestly, you know, I think for years Taco Bell has probably led to some excessive bathroom trips. So I don't think you can blame Taco Bell now for diarrhea. That's just sort of an asterisk. Like, you go to Taco Bell, you're going to the bathroom later. That's just happening. Mm-hmm. I'm such a lady. So this is a gastrointestinal illness, cycloporiasis, caused by microscopic parasites spreading through contaminated food is the thought. Although I thought I read something that people are like, is it swimming, a swimming pool?
Oh, yeah. In Arizona, they thought it might be transferring via swimming. Ugh. So you get it via the food and then you transfer it to somebody via swimming
Whatever.
Pools.
Whatever. I don't know. But look, nobody, unless you're, you know, having to want to have a hot girl summer and drop 10 pounds, I don't think anybody's trying to get explosive diarrhea. I'm also not advocating losing weight by expelling bodily fluids, just for the record. But I asked our subscribers, just for fun, I'm sure you guys were like, really, Brandy? You don't get a show poll yesterday because you're not live, and then you come back with this show poll. Mm-hmm. So I asked you guys, are you doing anything different in your consumption habits to avoid getting the diarrhea virus? Because, like, a lot of it has been, this is lettuce, right? Lettuce, right. Blah, blah, blah. I mean, I got lettuce in my fridge right now. Am I going to wash it? I always wash it.
Right.
So, Nicole, are you so worried about this that you will be doing something different?
Well, I feel like we're jinxing ourselves here, but no. I mean, I wash everything as well, but I'm just going to pray that I don't get this virus because Daryl would have to fill in for me again.
Yes. 10% of you say yes, you are doing something different. Nancy Campbell wins the comment of the day.
Uh-oh.
She says, instead of masks, we now have to wear Depends. Yes. Government mandated Depends.
Yep. There we go.
Yes.
It does feel like there's always something that right before this, there was the rats, the Hanna virus or whatever it was. And like, it just feels like they want to, it's a constant fear. They have to make sure that we're always in fear. They're in control.
Yeah. Matt says, I once swallowed a string and it came out tied. I shit you not. K-N-O-T.
Oh, for the love.
Hilarious. So my friend Sarah, who is a doctor, I don't think she'll mind me saying that, she, of course, wants to clarify something for me on the medical perspective. I just want to clarify. Cyclospora is a protozoan parasite, not a virus or bacteria. Look, Sarah, I just read it in headlines. It said virus. She says, regardless, I'm just making sure we wash our food extra well, and I will avoid bagged salads, which have always been sketchy anyway. Public health officials need to stop the alarmist warnings like this, which will only hurt businesses, farms, and frankly cause people to avoid eating healthy food. That's a really good point. It should surprise no one that this is yet another example of how our officials learned nothing from COVID. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, look, I haven't heard any instances of people dying from it, so, yeah.
I will say that clarification is important. I mean, this is worse. Viruses are, you know, it's just a virus. I mean, it's scary, but it's a virus and it doesn't gross me out as much. I mean, parasites are
protozoan
worms.
Parasite. That sounds worms. Diabolical.
That's a real thing. A living organism that's living inside you.
Yeah.
That's disgusting.
This is interesting. Crafty Grandma Crispy over on Local says, just more evidence that you should wash all produce with more than just water. What else would you wash it with, though?
Oh, there is a spray that you can get. I do know this. There's this fruit and vegetable spray that you can get that will extra, you know, antibacterial-ish.
Interesting, because yeah, I was like, what, soap? What do you want to wash
Joe's,
it with?
Maybe Whole Foods has it.
Okay, yeah. Never heard of this. Uh-huh. B. Larson, Brandy, I might clean my lettuce and other produce a little bit better, but it won't change my eating patterns. But if we're not here tomorrow, you know why. you know why.
Yeah.
We're really classy ladies. We like to talk about these things on the show. So most of you saying, no changes for me. What?
Get yourself some horse dewormer.
Yeah. And some, and what is the actual name of it? Or you're trying not to trigger the YouTube algorithm. Don't
right.
say it.
Don't
okay.
say it.
Oh my gosh.
Don't say it. They'll take it off the show.
Oh, D-Dub on X says, I knew my decision to never eat vegetables was the right one. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. No, you should eat your vegetables. Sarah's right. Good. It could discourage people from eating healthy. Mm-hmm. We don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. All right. Should we get into our comments from the live stream? On Ferguson being the most tone-deaf governor alive, Lacey Fern gave me $10, said thank you for exposing the truth about leaders in Washington State. Thank you for listening. David Clark, Bob is delusional. Oh, sorry, Nicole. Go ahead.
Oh.
I'm just getting used
David
to you
says,
reading comments with
Bob is delusional. Didn't the state lose 48 billion in companies.
I don't know what the number is, but
I don't know what the number is right now either. But yeah, he's definitely focusing on these numbers that come from last year before the numbers hit from this year, because he knows they'll be bad.
Son Miller. Bob will need shoulder surgery soon from all the back padding. Yes, it's just got bad shoulder.
On the initiative thief getting charged, old sub-sailor with $20 says, if the right doesn't do something about the out-of-control far left, revolutionary militants will be under communism within the next 10 to 15 years. Full implementation of Insurrection Act and use of overwhelming force.
Yeah, the move towards authoritarianism is way more concerning from the left than the right. Like, do I see some shades of taking things too far with Trump? Of course. But this is institutional on the left, and it's from the ground up. And that's really terrifying.
And they're more prone strategic.
To violence. And they're, yeah, more strategic, way more quick to violence than the right.
And have no morals. They don't care. They'll lie, just like we said. Ferguson knowingly lies about all of this.
Yeah. Tanya Butterton, I'd like to see the dude make a public apology where he has to recite the RCWs regarding initiative signature gathering, talking about the initiative thief getting charged.
I don't want the guy to go to jail. I do want to hear his story.
I do think a couple days in jail. I was making a distinction between prison
and jail.
Like prison for a rob too.
I'm sure he already get a couple days in jail.
I don't think they arrested him, because I thought I saw in the documents they sent us that they were like, you know, it was like a service by mail, I'm pretty sure. So I don't think they arrested him for it. I could be wrong, but let's see. You want to do Necro Two Shoes?
Sure. I'll remind everyone of those vote auditors that were up on felony charges because they didn't wear a mask during vote counting.
That is a damn.
This is
you know
far
what?
Worse than that.
Those two
it's true.
Election observers in Island County who are still going through this legal process of facing felonies for refusing to wear a mask.
Yep.
That is such a good point for me to sit here and say, but like I don't think they should face a felony, and you know, but what they did is way less bad than what this guy did, and he's not facing a felony. It's such a good point. It is it's an injustice system.
Absolutely.
And if you're conservative in this state, you better hope that they never come for you.
But again,
it's
Pierce County versus Island County, right? Wasn't it Island County? So it's another reason the sheriff is on the chopping block.
On the sheriff story, Wa Up says appointing a sheriff is insanity. If they do, the feds can come in. I don't think the feds can do anything about this because it's a state election. It's a local election. The feds have no standing here to come in and say that you can't oust a duly elected sheriff. This is you guys, this is terrifying that they can do this and that they are brazen about it and honest about why. We didn't like the sheriff voters chose. So this was the only path to get rid of him. You crooks. You absolute crooks.
And it really is. These are the people that are getting into these positions to make these choices. You think that city council or these commission spots or things like this are not a big deal? They're a big deal.
They're a big deal. You're right. That people wouldn't normally say, oh, I want to get appointed to the Charter Review Commission.
Right. We typically don't cover these types of things if these crazies get in.
Yeah.
But now it's like, well, we cover them after they get in.
Yeah. Holy, Miranda put a lot in here today. We would be here till 2 p.m. reading all these. On Waw City's continuing to punish landlords, West Seed $4.99 for Nicole's central air conditioning. Wait a second.
I think it's going to cost a little more than that.
First of all, I also said I don't have central air. So why are you giving Nicole $4 when I don't have central air either?
Because you said it was up to your husband. So maybe he's funding.
Fine. Carry on.
I think I need a couple more $4.99s for that, though.
Yeah.
From Country Guy, what about the power draw and global warming?
Oh, it doesn't matter. No, climate change. Can't do that. On the trans extremists in San Francisco, John Thomas, Marxist Democrats getting the treatment they cheered on for Republicans. Yeah.
From XR.
I got rid of that. Sorry, go ahead. You can read it. Okay. It's back in. You already started.
Yeah. XRP My Pants. Oh, whoops. Yep, got it.
Got it.
That was a true Simpsons moment, but sounds like threats to him.
Yeah. On the diarrhea story, Nancy Campbell also gave us $5 for the Depends. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Wow, lots of bathroom talk today.
It is. It's horrible.
What the heck? From I am in What, have you read that one before?
I am Sithazagod. Go ahead.
Okay. Since it's a parasite, I would suggest avoiding Olympia.
Yeah, that's where the parasite's coming from. John Thomas, Miranda, can you ask Brandy if she saw the WAH 9th congressional candidate pulled all the queer support from her website because of Muslim supporters, LOL.
I did see that.
We should talk about that tomorrow. I forgot. I was going to put it on the show today, but I didn't.
Not surprising.
You want to knock out this one?
From Big Princess. It was my birthday on Sunday, and I want to hear Brandy and Nicole sing happy birthday.
Okay, all right. It's coming.
I'll back up a little.
Merwin Wren, just for you, Nicole, you and Nicole, for being awesome. Appreciate you guys. So nice. I'll save that happy birthday until the end.
Okay.
All right, Nicole, thank you. Yeah. We'll get to our closing sanity check and a rendition of happy birthday coming up next. First, if you're trying to save money right now, I'm telling you, take the First Mark challenge because you can save money instantly with First Mark insurance. We need insurance. It's not like you can avoid it. So the question is, do you have the right insurance at the right price? 11,000 families in Washington have taken the First Mark challenge. So many of them have been Undivided viewers and listeners who are now saving money for something they needed anyway. Steve emailed us, said, I saved over $1,800. It was a very smooth transaction. Mike and I just saved $2,000 on our renewal this year. Holy smokes. I mean, that cover the increased cost of gas plus some.
There you go.
And it's just so easy and it's free to do. So call our friends at First Mark Insurance, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. And the customer service is worth it to me. I mean, honestly, to be able to call someone, they pick it up, human being in Washington state on the phone, keeping you up to date via email on what's going on with your policies, especially in the event that you need to use one of them. It's just fantastic. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance companies. They always have your best interest in mind. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, man, it really amazes me sometimes the political candidates who are pushed out to run for something. And I just think that normal people don't want to do it anymore. Normal people don't want to do it anymore because this Michigan Senate candidate, Hallie Stevens, she's straight out of Parks and Rec.
I am going to be working on our behalf. I am going to be telling the stories on our behalf. And you better believe I'm going to be doing it with a little bit of joy, a little bit of enthusiasm, a little bit of energy, and a little bit of stick it to them. Because that's the Michigan way.
Is that not Tina Fey? Who's Amy Poehler?
Amy Poehler.
Amy,
yes.
Poehler. A little bit of stick it to him. The problem is her opponent's even worse. He's like one of the, you know, pro Gaza or pro Hamas radicals. Like, so it's like, oh, you're just going to have to, I give him a little stick it to him. And look,
the Michigan way.
Just rough stuff.
Poor Michigan.
Where's, I guess she's authentic. Maybe that's how she really is. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm doing a birthday song quick before we leave. Big Princess. It was my birthday on Sunday. You know what that means. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Big Princess. Happy birthday to you. And Big Princess is like a 6'5" man, which is very funny. Mm-hmm. All right. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. Slightly more appreciation for our paid subscribers, because that's how we do this show. That's how the show stays, I would say, recession-proof, but I mean Bob Ferguson-proof. You know what I mean? They can hurt us in a million ways, but they can never take our subscribers from us. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says, support the show. Oh, Michigan way. I'm going to use that clip over and over in the show. I just love it.
Gotta get down.
I hope she wins because I'd like to hear more speeches from her. I have nothing else. We'll see you tomorrow.